The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly today. Look out, Norwich, there's a storm coming. A whirlwind of manifest destiny erupting out of Stanley Park with Stevie G, its epicentre. Will this slip? Won't it? Who knows? But we salute an afternoon when football remembered one of its darkest days and then produced one of its brightest. Elsewhere, we round up a weekend of upsets right across Europe. Borussia beating Bayern, Lyon beating PSG, Arsenal beating Wigan. With post tweets, what's in Wanda's love triangle, and Greg's good point about David Stockdale, that is today's Football Weekly. Hey, this does not f***ing slip now. Listen to me, this does not f***ing slip. Listen, this is gone. We go to the next one exactly the same. We go again. Come on. The words of Arsene Wenger there after the Gunners' stirring FA Cup win over Wigan this weekend. We'll talk more about that later on. But really emotional set of matches over the last couple of days. We've got quite an
sounded
emotional...
like my cousin then.
I particularly like the A at the beginning.
But yeah, Barney Rona yet again. Yet again, Barney Rona.
I'm always hanging around, stinking up the place.
Right. Nice to see you again, Barney.
Hello.
All right. This is your first appearance this season in this pod.
I've been away and... I finally managed to come in.
All right. Creative differences. Nice one. Amy Lawrence.
Hi.
You're back. Nice to see you as well.
Nearly tripped over his red carpet on the way in.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's been a lot. Yeah, it's already kicking off. There's been a lot of love on the posts about you, Barney. You must be able to. Well, I don't know if you read that.
Well, you know, when you're players who don't get picked for a while, people say, well, they should pick him, shouldn't they? And then when you are picked, they remember how rubbish you are.
Well, perhaps. We'll see, eh? Amy Lawrence here. Barry Glendening, perennial favourite.
Hello.
All right. And topicality's Greg Bukowski.
Hello, James.
All right, Greg. All right. Liverpool Man City, you and Barney were both there.
Yes, we were, yeah. Barney in a professional sense and me in a completely dispassionate sense, as you imagine. Yeah. Now, yesterday was just, it was fantastic. Everything you'd want a match of that magnitude to be. I mean, it was exhilarating, it was a thrilling game. You know, I thought both teams played how you would expect them to play as well. I mean, Liverpool came out the blocks, kind of carried on this wave of emotion and just flew into City. And they ruffled them for the first 25 minutes and scored the two goals. And then I thought City's resolve after they conceded the second was fantastic, though. And they were the dominant force from, say, Liverpool's second goal all the way through until Liverpool scored the third.
You and other Liverpool fans at Anfield must have been very, very worried in the second half.
Steven Gerrard said it was the longest 90 minutes he's ever played in. It was probably the longest 17 minutes I've ever known from when Liverpool scored that
first
goal to the end.
You're not listening to the pod much these days.
Try not to. Yeah. Okay. From the moment Liverpool scored that third to the end was just completely draining. I mean, when City scored the second, I think there was a lot of Liverpool fans who maybe at that point, and me included, thought they're going to get a third here and, you know, this is going to be the end of it. And, you know, fair play to City because I thought Silva was wonderful. Everywhere he went, he seemed to be surrounded by 10 yards of space. Like, he carries a force field of pitch around with him that just bounces players off because he just couldn't be picked up by anybody. It was a crazy roller coaster day of emotions.
Mm. Barney, you were there as Greg was saying, in a professional.
Yeah, well, I'd like to thank Greg for that. I think it's probably the first time I've ever been associated with the word professional.
Well, what was the turning point? Because City came out, they were caught cold.
Mm.
Well, by what everyone expected Liverpool to do.
Yeah,
and then what changed it?
I don't think it was particularly to do with City. I have to say, I think Liverpool came out on a massive adrenal surge. Mm. And at the start of the second half, they just didn't play.
Possibly because they were like punched out like a boxer or something.
I think
the amount of energy they put into
it.
It
was a bit like that.
Yeah.
I mean, City are really... I know, I was quite confused by this game generally. I've sort of had I had in my head what I thought about it. But when City were being overrun, they struck me as a team completely without leadership. They looked like they were lost. It looked like here's a team absolutely playing on emotion against another one that looks bewildered, a bunch of very professional sportsmen thrown together for a lot of money, and that seemed to be the narrative. But City are a very stirring team. I mean, somehow, out of nowhere, they've concocted a brilliant spirit, and they did fight back. And they could have won it quite easily. I thought Liverpool were just fantastic, and a weird team in a way. I was saying to Greg earlier, they're like the front end of a Ferrari welded onto a rickety old jalopy at the back. I mean, when they defend, you kind of think, oh my God, how are they going to do the Champions League next year? But that front four is absolutely brilliant, yeah. And they should just play like that.
I think, and from what Barney's saying, I mean, you know, everybody knows Liverpool's defensive frailties, and that's why they have to come out, I think, as quick as they do, because they need to get in front, because at some point they're probably going to concede a goal, particularly against a team as good as City are. So that's the way they have to play. And as much as City might have known how Liverpool were going to come out, there's one thing knowing about it, and there's another thing when you've got players as pacey and as able to stretch the game as that Liverpool team are. And as Barney said, Coutinho's passing was fantastic yesterday, the way he was, you know,
he passes so quickly,
and yes, he was hitting longer balls about 30, 40 yards and releasing players. And Sterling, I thought, was wonderful again. I mean, he's been so consistent since he came back in December.
That thrilling arrogance of youth, seeing him at, what is he, 19?
He's 19, yeah.
Ahead of Vincent Kompany and Joe Hart, two kind of fairly world-class internationals, and making them both look silly.
Yeah, throwing him a dummy.
It was very funny, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like Laurel and Hardy, because they both went at exactly the same moment. And you just don't often see that. They look like park footballers. It was a brilliant shimmy.
There's a moment in the first half, I don't know if you remember it, where Sterling had three players round him, and he turned on a sixpence and pushed away with pace and went through and dribbled. He actually cocked his finish up in the end, but it was the kind of thing that you do see a player such as Messi, or, you know, I mean, Silva's done it for City as well this season. It was a fantastic moment for somebody as young as that to do.
There was this lovely imagery in a way that it was supposed to be this battle of the two great attacking forces in English football, and in a way the game was defined by a moment of defending. And we've built it all up as saying these are the great goal scorers of our league and who's going to come out on top. And maybe it's not about the goal scorers, maybe it's about, you know, you mentioned Liverpool's vulnerability at the back and that enabled City to come back in such an amazing fashion. But perhaps it's who defends best that might actually end up sorting out the league in the end.
Oh, interesting. Vincent Kompany proved pretty key in that regard. He was sold the W
on the first one. On Match of the Day. The commentator, Kompany's thrown it away. I mean, it was an amazing finish to be able to hit a ball like that that's bouncing
Coutinho
out to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of half on the turn, into the corner, past a goalkeeper of Joe Hart's quality.
It was the kind of clearance that wouldn't be out of place on a park pitch Sunday by some big,
that's true,
big bloater.
But it's how we look at things now, where it's always, you know, you're finding the moment that won the league or the moment that lost the league. And in fact, I'm wondering what you felt about this bit, Greg, when Sturridge went through and there was that pass for Suarez that was so on that you felt this could be the league, and he doesn't make the pass and lost the ball, and Suarez looked absolutely devastated.
But you could also say Silva's stretch and a bit like Gascoigne in Euro 96, where he missed it and could have put City 3-2 up, that could have been the league there for City. And reminded me a bit of Good Johnson's missing that 2005 semi-final.
It's funny you say that, because
Barry's almost completed a pretty exceptional piece of art on his piece of A4, so I'm just going to leave him to complete that and invite you to continue your sentence, Bonnie.
Well, I was just going to...
I ask you then about James Milner? Because when you're looking at who and how this game turned from being Liverpool all over it and then Liverpool being completely under the cosh, a lot of people suggesting that the arrival of James Milner into the Man City side. Producer Ben was really keen to hear your thoughts on his performance, given that you were the man who described him as like a man doing laps while the rest of his team is performing synchronised swimming.
Yeah, well, something like that.
But
that's his England role, where he just runs up and down.
This
was kind of, this was peak Milner. So when he plays for City, you know, he has a much more attacking role. And he's a very focused, relentless footballer. And they basically put him on Flanagan and said, just go down that side. And Flanagan's a good player, but he's young. And Milner was great. Yeah, he's very focused, he's very reliable. And, you know, he wasn't freaked out by the atmosphere as well.
He also freed Silva up quite a bit to have even more influence on the game, I think, because he put, you know, more of the hard yards in, and Silva just found even more space.
But I was just going to say about Steven Gerrard.
Ah.
I've been thinking about Liverpool and thinking, how are they going to replace Steven Gerrard? That's a big question, because he's not going to have another big season like this, is he?
Is he not?
I don't think so. I mean, come on, he's 34, he's having brilliant season, he's driving them on to the league
he'll
title.
He'll be rotated next season as well, because of the amount of games.
He's going to play a World Cup. He'll come, you know, you can't keep playing like this forever.
Mm.
But watching him, I mean, it really is about the leadership, and football is about emotion. I don't think he's irreplaceable as a player at all at the moment. I mean, he needs those two guys who run in that midfield around him, and, you know, he does his thing. But I have to say, I have to sort of come out as a bit of a Gerrard convert. I mean, I used to love young Gerrard. You remember when he first came through? Just brilliant, brilliant, fearless athlete. From about 2006, I've sort of gone off Gerrard a bit. You know, he's got that sort of English, elite English footballer thing where you kind of feel they're a bit complacent. I mean, not necessarily him particularly, but he's in that group. But late Gerrard is just fantastic, isn't it? I mean, that interview after the game,
yeah.
I almost felt that was an intrusion. And we're so used to seeing these players talking and spouting cliches. But there was someone who's genuinely emotional about a big occasion that he's got family ties to, friends, everything. And I almost felt they shouldn't have spoken to him, that football should always be that emotional. We should just take it as read. And that was, it did feel a bit intrusive, I thought.
Surely it's yours now, Stephen. Nothing's ours. What did you say to the players? None of your business.
Yeah, yeah, well, quite right. Yeah,
and then everybody saw what he said, because the intrusion by the camera there as well.
Did you mean it's an intrusion when he was doing that, the huddle and talking to them, or do you mean the post-match interview?
I thought both things. I mean, the huddle, you knew what was going on. It was actually fascinating to watch,
really,
wasn't it?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I can see your point totally about it being intrusive, but as a viewer, the ability to watch something like that when it is so emotionally intense was unbelievable. I thought, you know, it's something that will stay in the memories of people.
I thought there might be people watching it who haven't really seen, you know, just experienced the Premier League quite distantly, who to see someone so involved and so passionate about it is something you won't forget.
Gerrard's emotion yesterday encapsulated how all Liverpool fans feel, in that it's basically now everybody's been trying to keep a lid on their emotions for so long, Steven Gerrard included, and that game just lifted the veil off it all, and there's this raw emotion underneath it all, which is just spilling out from the stands. It's been 24 years, such a long time. This opportunity has presented itself, and I think there's a fear that if we don't take it now, then when are we going to take it?
You know? Wow.
I think that's how Gerrard feels, because he feels that he's right at
Carpe title, eh?
Well,
carpe title. But he's right. Nothing's won. Mm. Nothing's won. Norwich should be straightforward. The words of Ian McIntosh, actually. Chelsea is a cup final. Newcastle is essentially a bye. But Palace away is the bastard game, says foul-mouth talking's Ian McIntosh.
Yeah, he could well be right. I mean, there would be a slight concern that, having invested so much energy and emotion in yesterday's game, things might be a bit flat at Carrow Road at the weekend. I think it's Sunday they play. But Norwich aren't very good. Although they did improve. Their performance against Fulham in defeat at the weekend was pretty good and better than they have delivered under
Newton. Yeah, but still.
I suppose I'm just being the harbinger of doom or the devil's advocate or whatever, but just the intensity of that game on Saturday, it will be interesting to see how Rodgers goes about. Well, I suppose we won't see it, will we? But it would be interesting to see if they are as up for the game.
Now would be the time to see a Being Liverpool documentary. Right?
Yes, indeed.
Right.
Did you feel sorry for Norwich a bit? I mean, this incredible emotional game's gone on, and the end of everything, we're going to kill Norwich. Let's get Norwich. Like, what have we done? You know,
there's this magical thing in sport called momentum, and you can't. I don't know how it gets created, and you can't make it. You can't buy the ingredients. It just happens completely naturally, and then it can stop when you least expect it. And it's the best thing in the world, I think, in any kind of sport that you could possibly have going for you. And you just look at Liverpool, and I think that feeling of momentum, even if they might be drained or emotional or whatever might be going on at Norwich, it's almost impossible to see that that's not going to carry them through. I think when a team is on that kind of cresting wave, the Chelsea game, I think, that's where I hesitate to disagree with Steven Gerrard, but you know, I don't think it's about Norwich. I can see what he was doing there, but it's all about Chelsea. It's all about that Chelsea game.
One other thing about Liverpool's run-in, the Henderson red, how much is that going to affect them? Is it three games?
Yeah. It's going to be three games.
And he'll miss the Chelsea game?
He'll miss the Chelsea game. I mean, I think Liverpool have... I mean, it's very lucky that Joe Allen has looked really good when he's been coming on.
Right.
As, you know, the midfielder, he's loads of energy, making loads of tackles. And I think it's, you know, he's found form at just the right time to cover for Henderson.
And we will find out later today what Daniel Sturridge's injury is. Because that is...
That's possibly more worrying.
I don't know. I mean, they play Suarez at front, but it...
Although Suarez has probably been at his best this season when Sturridge wasn't with him, between, I think it was around December time, around Christmas time, when he was knocking in goals for fun. So I don't think, as long as Suarez doesn't pick up an injury next week, I think Liverpool should be okay.
All right, well, the Chelsea game's coming up in a week on Sunday. What kind of vehicle are Chelsea, Barney? What kind of hybrid hot rod are they?
Well, definitely not a hybrid. No. Yeah, some kind of...
A sensible family vehicle.
A very efficient, large, powerful Japanese people carrier.
Are they?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Okay, just to finish off this part one on them, they didn't exactly look like champions in waiting, did they, against 10-man Swansea?
No, they didn't at all. But they ground out the result, and you know, with their own sort of ruthless efficiency, and they were sort of rode their luck. Chico Flores probably deserved to get sent off, but the manner in which it happened was a bit distasteful. I think you know, Chelsea players demanding he get a second yellow, but he deserved it, and by the letter of the law, yeah, he should have gone. But Chelsea were far from impressive, but it's another 3 points in the bag.
It's going to be quite a game then Sunday week when they visit, and I imagine approach game with every bit of the same attacking intensity that City showed this last weekend. Oh, there's still more to come. No, Amy?
Say that also, from a Chelsea point of view, that game comes slap bang in the middle of the two semi-finals against Atletico Madrid.
Wow, so, and when they play with Champions League, that's when all the bad results come. The results, when you look back on this season, it's always just ahead of a Champions League game, and this time it's after and then before one, that they've slipped up.
It's Sunday to Tuesday as well, isn't it? It's still, at the moment,
it may be changed.
Yeah, I think the Premier League are going to address that.
There's a thing on the Premier League where it's like, this is open subject to change.
All right, nice Premier League voice there, Barney. Greg, I think you're leaving us at the end of this part.
Yes, I am.
So do bust out, unleash on us the David Stockdale talking point.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, you know, Felix Magath, he dropped Stekelenburg.
Yeah.
Brought in David Stockdale, the young English stopper, who stopped Norwich from scoring in that first half and created the opportunity for Hugo Rodallega to win the game. And, you know, what a risk, you know, what a risk, what a gamble. And basically that's the only other thing I know about football from this weekend.
From this weekend.
So basically your amazing David Stockdale fact is that a goalkeeper made some saves.
He made some very good saves, yeah.
I'm thoroughly underwhelmed by that. I was expecting something out of the top drawer. When I'm... See, this is the kind of thing I'm... he left all his intensity at Anfield yesterday, and now this is what he brings to the party.
Isn't this the whole point? That's why I'm being yanked out now. Yeah. This is why the man in the black coat has got his hand on my shoulder and he's pulling me out of the room.
This is Liverpool against Norwich next weekend.
Wow. Well, I'm sure you had a much better Fulham versus Norwich.
I don't.
Well, there you go.
No.
Greg, I enjoyed it, Greg. I thought it was good.
Thanks, Barney.
Greg, super stuff. Many thanks for being with us. And we'll be speaking to you again soon before this season is out. Oh. I'm sure of that.
Can't wait.
FA Cup. Wow, if Sunday afternoon at Anfield was the high point of the weekend, arguably, what do you think the low point, maybe, football terms, was? Was it Arsenal Wigan, maybe? And I'm not being nasty, but it was... a pretty god-awful match, though, wasn't it, until the last bit?
It's funny because I was saying this before to Greg and Barney, but you know when you're watching games on telly and you're not there and you really want to be there, you think, oh, this is the place to be. Well, I was watching a game at Wembley and I was kind of thinking, I wish I wasn't here, but, you know, it was definitely that feeling of not watching the game on the weekend.
Right.
However, from an Arsenal perspective, it was all about the means to the end. And the notion that they might have not got to Wembley and been knocked out by a lower division team was, I think, making people fairly terrified. And you could sense the anxiety was extraordinary, particularly from Arsene Wenger. And the fact that it wasn't actually a game full of thrills and spills and 90-mile-an-hour football meant that it was quite easy for your eye to be drawn away from the pitch and onto this quite extraordinary sight of Wenger sort of almost looking like he was... in a doctor's waiting room waiting for some really scary news. He looked incredibly stressed for the entire game. When they were drawing, when they went behind, when they equalised, coming up to penalties, the whole thing just looked like a terrible ordeal. And I think his own anxiety sort of spread a little bit to the team who found it difficult to find their rhythm and get themselves going. But I do admire the way that when it all looked like it was going to come tumbling down and everybody makes... justifiable in some cases question marks about Arsenal's ability to withstand the pressure. That was a high pressure situation when they were behind, and Wigan had played extremely well to take the lead, and they somehow sort of found that reservoir of defiance somewhere and dug deep to recover, with Mertesacker, I think, who would have been devastated to be the villain, because he's had probably one of the most important parts to play in Arsenal's season. So it was good for him that he equalised.
Yeah. In the meantime, Everton have moved past them into fourth place, but Arsenal will be going back to Wembley in a couple of weeks' time. Well, in a month's time, effectively,
May
for
17th.
The final. Right, by which time it will be 3,283 days since they last picked up any trophy or silverware or anything.
Well, maybe, but this is a good stat on the penalty shootout.
All right.
Apparently, of Arsenal's last 22 penalties in shootouts, 22 different scorers.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How bizarre.
Well, that's what I thought.
Much better than Greg Stockdale's stat.
I enjoyed Kallstrom's penalty, by the way, didn't you? Didn't he look so composed? He looked like a man who hadn't actually done any running around for about 6 months. I'll just step out of my limo and take a penalty.
Amy, where do you think Arsene Wenger's going to be managing next season? What's your gut tell you?
My gut tells me I don't think he's going to be the Arsenal manager anymore. I just get this feeling that he looks like it's the end of the line. And I think that it's quite difficult for him to come out and say that and admit it, possibly to himself and certainly to everybody else. Not so much because it's any kind of admission of defeat or anything like that, but it's been such a massive part of his life. And I think when you're coming to the end of a cycle of something, it's not always easy to admit it. And I don't think he was expecting it, really, even of himself, that he would necessarily go down that road. I don't know. I mean, he may well turn around and decide to have a new contract. I saw these rumours about Paris Saint-Germain resurfacing. I'm not sure about that.
I don't think Laurent Blanc's position has been particularly helped by the last week, by their performance at Stamford Bridge. And
Blanc will be off, definitely.
Yeah.
He was like sixth choice or whatever. He was a stand-in.
Does Wenger strike you, Amy, as the type of man who might, say, take a Pep-style sabbatical for a year, 6 months or a year before taking on a new challenge, or is he one of these workaholics who just wants to be in a job?
Exactly. I think this is why he's finding this whole thing so difficult, because I don't think he can imagine what else he could possibly do with his days other than be a full-time football manager. He's not one of the types who has hobbies and there's other things that he's desperate to do. He probably doesn't want to go travel the world. Or
I have the perfect job for him. He should be England manager. He is the perfect England manager.
He should
oversee the whole thing, coaching everything.
I know, but Barney, he's never shown the remotest interest.
Doesn't matter. I'm going to talk him into it. He'd be perfect. He should be in charge of that Burton thing, everything.
Well, I think he'd probably be more inclined to do something where he was working every day with players at maybe youth level. I think being an international manager is just not something that appeals to him at all. The kind of I'm just loafing around, going to see games and hanging out in directors' boxes,
because that's what they do international.
Yeah,
matches,
and waiting for my short, sharp moment of 5 days with the players.
I think it should be a new role. I think he should be in charge of everything at the FA. He should just reshape what they do.
But he already does punditry for the French media. Perhaps he'll become. I don't know, like one of these former managers who rolls into studios and.
Well, he could. I mean, Roy Keane was very critical of Arsenal's over-the-top celebrations at beating Wigan and getting to a cup final on penalties. So maybe Arsenal could just become a pundit and make fun of Roy Keane's over-the-top celebrations.
Perhaps.
When the Republic of Ireland beat, I don't know, Lithuania.
It's a stretch, isn't it? We'll go with Lithuania. Yeah. All right.
There was a nice photo somebody posted of Man United's players celebrating gleefully as they beat Wigan, a championship team, in the Community Shield this season.
All right. Well, anyway, Hull Sheffield turned out to be quite the thriller, didn't it? Goals galore in that one.
Yeah, it was...
Sheffield United, I should specify.
Classic game of two halves. Hull were terrible in the first half and were deservedly behind, and then apparently they're... Captain Curtis Davis, who's the very, very learned among footballers, apparently, and just got in amongst them and told some home truths and Steve Bruce didn't have to do anything. And
he
had a nice cup of tea. He made a couple of little tactical switches, and that was it. And then it was a different Hull that came out for the second half. Presumably, you know, he said, this is your big chance to get to an FA Cup final. Don't mess it up, probably with some added Stevie G-type expletives.
Oh, yeah.
And, they Sheffield United still ran them close, and neither team have any reason to be particularly upset about it, because Sheffield United give an excellent account of themselves and got a standing ovation from their own fans at the end of the game.
Steve Bruce is playing mind games, isn't he?
Oh, but then he
feared Bruce mind game.
But then he had a chuckle and admitted that he was just talking rubbish. I was very, that was quite simpatico, wasn't it?
I like Steve Bruce. I find it quite hard to watch him. I always feel that he's about to burst into tears.
Oh.
But I like him. I feel very sympathetic towards him.
Yeah. Well, moving along, PSG mentioned the Laurent Blanc situation, Le Mystère Blanc, as Lequipe was calling it, ahead of their game on Sunday night away to Lyon, which they promptly lost 1-0. I mean, they still win the title on that, but it's just not looking very good for him there, is it? Another Euro news in the Bundesliga, Bayern Munich beaten 3-0 by Borussia Dortmund. They've lost two Bundesliga games in a row. That was the heaviest defeat of Pep Guardiola's coaching career. And, Raphael Honigstein, we asked him about this on Sunday night. He said, oh, simple, Pep doesn't do friendlies. So, they won the title and, you know, they're open to all comers now. In Italy, big game tonight, Juve on top of the table, but they're away to Udinese. Roma are putting a little bit of pressure on them. They've won seven games in a row now, and they've really got their mojo back now that Totti's returned from injury. But the big story was Sampdoria Inter. I don't know if you've been across this at all.
I've heard about this, yes.
The Wanda Derby.
Wanda was married to Maxi Lopez, has three children with him. And
this has got Hollywood written all over it. Basically, she was married with Maxi Lopez, a couple of years older than her. She's 27 now, he's 30, and he's an Argentine footballer, former Barca man. He was at Sampdoria, and this young Argentine kid came to Sampdoria, Mauro Icardi, he's now 21, so 9 years his junior. And basically he took him under his wing, and they did everything together. There's some lovely pictures of them on holiday, and there's Wanda, and there's in the middle, and there's Maxi, and there's Mauro. But an awful thing happened. An awful thing happened that basically she... there's a bit of a dispute, but the version is that she ran off with the younger man, with young Mauro Icardi.
She insists that's not the case. Yeah. And that Maxi was perhaps playing away from home.
Yeah.
And... in the biblical sense, and therefore...
I remember that bit of the Bible.
And so she left him and they got divorced, and then she took up with
young Icardi. In which case, they've now got tattoos of each other all over the bits of their body, and he spends most of his days tweeting about how much he lusts after her body and how they do it all the day, up to 15 times a day. Anyway, Maxi Lopez...
15?
Apparently so. Anyway, Maxi Lopez has been pretty low-key about all of this, but he did suggest at one point that they stop tweeting pictures of them hanging out with his three kids, because he felt that's like his private life and stuff, to which Icardi's basically taken no notice. And so it was quite a feisty affair when Maxi Lopez's Sampdoria hosted Icardi's Inter this weekend. As the Inter team came out, the Sampdoria fans are shouting, uccidetelo, uccidetelo, kill him, kill him. And then they have the pre-game handshake, when, of course, Maxi Lopez does the classic Wayne Bridge withdrawal of hand. But Icardi, he's obviously got the attributes, as indeed we can, 15 times a day, he clearly has. But this was manner to him. He lapped it up. He was giggling with his teammates before kickoff. And then, of course, he went and opened the scoring, and the Samp fans are really giving him loads, and he puts their hand to his ear like, come on. Can't hear what you're saying. So then Sam get a penalty, and Lopez thinks it's my chance for retribution, and he takes the ball off Eder, who's usually the penalty taker, and of course misses. Terrible afternoon for him, because then Icardi gets a brace, and there's a bit of a scuffle and all sorts of things, and then Icardi goes home with Wanda Nari.
Presumably Icardi had to leave very quickly after the game, because he's got 15.
I think Icardi's ready to take on any covers, so to speak. Anyway, so that was all very exciting. There was a couple of other things I should mention about that. He didn't miss the penalty, actually, to be fair, Maxi Lopez. It was saved by Inter's keeper, Handanovic, which is important because that's the 22nd time he's saved a penalty in his career. Handanovic, brilliant, brilliant keeper most of the time. The other thing that was interesting was the debut about 4 minutes from time of a young Sampdoria midfielder, good-looking fella, with a fine head of hair. Who was he? Mattia Lombardo, Attilio's son. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there you go.
What's Attilio up to these days? Managing anyone?
No, I didn't realise this, but apparently he is Roberto Mancini's assistant at Galatasaray.
Oh, okay.
Could his son have been born during that brief ill-fated spell at Crystal Palace and be eligible for England?
Well, that's an interesting shout, actually. Well, I'm not sure how old he is, actually. But it's a good shout, buddy. I dispute that it was an ill-fated spell at Palace. They regard him as one of their greatest players ever.
Well, didn't he not get paid?
That bit was less successful than his co-manager.
Did he end up suing the club? Was that him? That was someone else, wasn't it?
Maybe that was someone else.
But I don't know.
According to Ben, he co-managed with Thomas Brolin. I may not have been paying attention at that point. That's quite a managerial partnership, isn't it? Thomas Brolin and Attilio Lombardo. Anyway, also in Europe this weekend, Barcelona lose and Atletico lose Diego Costa, but for how long? Hey, let's find out with Dr. Sid. Hi, Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, Jimbo in near Earth orbit.
Hello. Sid, are you well?
Actually, I'm not that well, no. I've had tonsillitis the last few days.
No way. Good thing you're a doctor. Sid, listen, that's awful, and get well soon on that. But let's hope your voice holds out long enough to tell us about a momentous weekend in the Liga. Barcelona, 86% possession in their game against Granada, and yet...
And yet, they were beaten by Granada. Granada aside, fighting off relegation.
Yeah.
Barcelona, in theory at least, still in a reasonably good position to win the league. And I think, to be honest, that they might have lost the league this weekend now. And it was a weird one, really, because actually Barcelona created a lot of chances. It wasn't entirely sterile possession. But there's still an awful lot wrong with them. It's two defeats in a week. And from the possibility of a treble, the headline on Saturday morning, one of Catalan dailies, was the squad vowed to go for the double. Well, the double might have just gone because, I think their league title chances have taken a really big hit with that. And, of course, on Wednesday night, they play the Copa del Rey final against Real Madrid. So it could be that we have a seven-day spell in which, as the way that the Spanish always talk about it is, you know, the leaves of a margarita, of a what's the flower that you pluck
daisy,
the leaves off?
A right? Daisy.
Yeah, of a daisy. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. Well, you know what? But leaf by leaf,
Barcelona's season might be left with just a little stalk.
Wow, that's interesting. The Catalan press after that Granada defeat, you had Tataclismo, which I liked.
I must admit, I did like that one. Yeah,
El Mundo and Sport. Meanwhile. Had goodbye title, goodbye Tata, goodbye.
It's a pity that they don't say Tata like we do in English, because of course that would have been perfect.
Tata. Yeah, that is a shame, isn't it? All right, well, that was Barcelona. Let's talk about Atletico. They won, but it was a game with plenty of drama. Ooh, not least when Diego Costa, this is in the derby with Getafe, of course, stepped up to take a penalty. Then all of a sudden, a fan showed his bum. And it worked. Raphael Honigstein said he was presented with an opening.
Yes, well, I love this. There was a brilliant comment, and I must apologise because I can't remember the name of the person who sent me this message, but I thought it was a great one. The very bizarre, I was at the game yesterday, Getafe Atletico, and the last, I would say roughly the last 10 minutes, or maybe that's pushing it, maybe the last 6 or 7 minutes, the game was played in really bad light, really bad, and they didn't put the floodlights on. And I don't know if Getafe are completely strapped for cash, but they didn't put the floodlights on. This is really, really bizarre. Anyway, I mentioned this on Twitter, and someone's response was they didn't need floodlights, they had a full moon.
Yeah, they certainly did. Horrific picture, if you've seen that, but equally horrific pictures of Diego Costa's leg after he collided.
Yeah, he's fine.
Hmm?
He's fine. That's the amazing thing about it, yeah. Nice remark. There was two quite nice remarks about this. One was... A guy called Pepe Pasquez, who's Diego Simeone's kind of personal, personal communications manager. And he sent a message out after the game saying, relax, everybody, Diego Costa's fine. The post might need fixing, though. Mm-hmm. And then Simeone was asked about it, and Simeone said, well, one more scar on a lion doesn't do any damage, does it? And Costa really hit the post very, very hard on his shin. It opened up a really nasty, big, wide gash on the front of his shin. So much so that I think if you look at the pictures, I think you can see a bit of the bone.
Yeah.
I think you can see a little white strip in the middle, which I think is the bone, and it's not pleasant. And at the game, it looked really bad. I mean, they put him on a stretcher. They carried him around the pitch. He had his hand, his face in his hands, and clearly didn't want to look. There's a great shot of the camera looking across at him, and you see Felipe Luis turn and wave at the bench to say, get someone over here quickly, and then kind of look to the sky and very clearly say, Madre mia, to himself, because it looked pretty nasty. But actually, they said afterwards, and I suppose in a way this is natural, because when it's an injury through force of impact, it tends not to be really serious. It tends to be more a case of kind of something superficial than anything else. Afterwards, they said, look, it's a nasty gash. It will be stitched up, but it'll be fine. He walked out the stadium. Yes, he was hobbling, but he did walk out the stadium.
I have had exactly the same injury.
Really?
Yeah, playing
hockey.
Did
you walk out of there?
Well, I saw the bone. I had a huge cut, and I could see the bone in my shin.
Yeah.
And I had to be sort of helped off, and it was horrible, blood everywhere, and it was stitched up. But I was actually fine.
And how did you procure this?
I was whacked. It was a very heroic, a goal-saving challenge. Whacked in the shin.
You threw your body in there?
Yeah, selflessly. But I had the same injury, and I was back playing almost instantly.
Barney, isn't it?
Well, I am, yeah, I'm a lion, to be honest.
Very much England's brave Barney Rona.
It is. What about the Copa del Rey final then, Sid? Is it going to be a cracker? Barcelona-Real Madrid?
It's very weird, this, because in theory, yeah, it should be a cracker, shouldn't it? It should be really, really good. But there's a sort of slightly odd feel about it. I think partly because Barcelona are collapsing, although, of course, Madrid are rubbing their hands in glee at the possibility of completely knocking out Barcelona and provoking a huge crisis. That said, and I include myself in this, I think most people thought that Real Madrid were clear favourites in the league game, and that was a chance for Real Madrid to more or less knock Barcelona out of the title race. And Barcelona won 4-3 and sort of played really well, and it was a fantastic game. So, I don't know, it feels kind of a little bit not quite as big as it should be, but I think by Tuesday morning, certainly by Wednesday game time, it will feel massive, yeah.
Posts. Hey, Barney. A lot of excitement about you getting back. Here's Aware of Vacuity, who says, please get him to do his Ray Parler impression, Barney.
It's always a massive letdown.
When
you actually do things and people, it's never as good. Right. I once did a really good Kermit the Frog impression, and it was just off the cuff. It was out of nowhere. It was brilliant. And my kids have been asking me to do it again ever since. I can't, it won't be as good. It won't be funny. The faces will freeze with kind of, oh, is that it? And I think
Kermit the Frog?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I can remember how Kermit the Frog sounds. What does he sound like?
You can't trick me like that.
You're too fast for me. Ooh, Camp As You Like says, could your Ray Parler have a conversation with my Wenger? Have I done my Wenger on the pod before?
Yes.
Have I done my Wenger on the pod before?
I think it's better than your Steven Gerrard.
Yeah, probably, to be fair. Oh, Ulligur, out of Austria, says, could you guys ask Barney Roney two things, please?
Any random two things?
No. He has two in mind. Okay, the first one, don't go off on one on this, Barney, because, you know, time is tight. But last season you were in love with Bayern. Who is his missus now? Which team are you all...
It's true, I have gone off Bayern a bit.
You have? And who have you got the hots for now, then? Is it Liverpool?
Yeah,
there you go.
Liverpool.
And he tweeted a 7-year-old's World Cup match attacks 11, which has Fellaini in defence. Is said 12-year-old a little Guardiola, or is this simply the long-lasting effect Guardiola will have on the future generation? Barney?
Well, it was partly making do. He was down to the bare bones.
Oh, I see.
He had to make do. But also, as he pointed out, Fellaini could...
He could do a job.
Do a job, and also move forward out of defence. I think it was a progressive
thing.
A bit more Harry Redknapp than Pep Guardiola.
Indeed.
Is that a Harry Redknappism?
He's always down to the bare bones.
I don't know.
I just remember
he
deliberately put two sub goalies on the bench just so that he could say, well, I'm down to the bare bones.
Down to the bare bones. Yeah.
Was that your Ray Parler impersonation masquerading as Harry Redknapp?
Yeah.
I think it was.
That's stock London, isn't it?
Yeah.
We have to wheedle Kermit the Frog out before the end.
If you do a Miss Piggy in somewhere in this part, you might just lapse into it without even thinking.
Kermit!
That's not bad. So, Barry, you've got that right up there with your comic book shop guy, comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Do I do?
Yeah, you do.
I was disappointed with your Miss Piggy there, because you're defining her by her relationship to Kermit, which is, she's so much more than that.
Mm. Who have you got, Amy?
Simon Mayo from
Mayo,
the radio, and other podcasts, other popular podcasts. He does an excellent Fozzie Bear.
Does he?
Yeah.
It's of limited use, though, socially these days.
I can't really remember Fozzie Bear. How does it go?
Oh, God.
Barney, you almost had me. You were Anyway, listeners, sorry about that.
Bunch of Muppets, eh?
Anyway, now, I mentioned the worst offence in all of Europe. Do you know who that is? Who's got the worst defence in all of the top five leagues?
Sunderland.
Who's let in more goals per game than any other team from the top flight? It's not Sunderland, Barry, but that's a very good shout. Sunderland actually conceded 20 goals less than the team I'm thinking of.
Right. Is the team you're thinking of actually near the bottom of their league?
They certainly are. The worst defence on the continent.
Well, they might score more than the
team. Well, that's true.
You know.
It's Fulham, though.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Well, we could have thrown that at Greg with his David Stockdale bombshell.
But Fulham haven't conceded now in two consecutive
games. Imagine how bad they were before to not concede in the last two, and they've still got this terrible record. Anyway, remarkable turnaround and by Felix Magath, is it? I mean, I'm calling it that. Is it a remarkable turnaround?
I think
turnaround?
It is, because their running is reasonably straightforward. They either have to play teams who are down amongst the dead men with them, or else teams who have very little to play for.
Who've they got to play?
Spurs away, which is eminently winnable, you'd have to say. Hull at home. Hull are going to have their eye on the FA Cup final, I'd imagine, from here on in, and won't be too bothered about how they get on in the league. Stoke away, which is tough, and Palace at home, which could be tough.
Hmm.
But if you compare their run-in, say, to Norwich's, who have Liverpool home, Man U away, Chelsea away, Arsenal at home.
Why has no one told me this before?
You'd put your money on Fulham to stay up. Right. I mean, the two wins, I think they really, really had to beat Aston Villa 2 games ago, which they did. Now they've got the momentum, even though, albeit just 2 games worth, that Amy was talking about earlier, that's so important. And I would give them a sporting chance of staying up, which is not something you'd have said 2 weeks ago.
No.
Tony Pulis, isn't he incredible? I mean, really, manager of the year. Isn't it an amazing thing that he's done for Palace?
He's one of many contenders, of course. Fulham are now 2 points behind Norwich. West Brom are only a point better off, but they have a game in hand, West Brom, after their, once again, disastrous finale at home to Spurs. They were 3-0 up, and they ended up drawing it 3-3. Oh, dear.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's unforgivable, isn't it?
Mm.
If you're in that position, you've got a 3-goal lead, to throw it away is unforgivable. Although, they probably would have taken a point before the game if you'd offered it to them.
That's fair. So they're in the mix there. As are Swansea, are also on 33 points, but they don't have a game in hand, unlike the Baggies. And Villa do have a game in hand, and they've got a point more there, 4 points clear of the drop. But Cardiff are now only a point behind Fulham as well, after their really, really, really surprising 1-0 win away to Southampton.
Very surprising. I must say, I didn't see that at all. And, you talk about the emotion of the weekend, and obviously we got caught up in other slightly more high-profile games, but that looked like some pretty emotional scenes for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and the Cardiff players and fans.
It's funny because going into that, all this talk of Cardiff players leaking their formation to Crystal Palace before their clash with the Eagles, and a lot of suggestions that there were schisms in the dressing room. So, as you've completely taken aback, Southampton, is it the fact that Pochettino is once again humming and hawing over his future? Was it the injury to Jay Rodriguez that's hurt the spirit of this side?
I don't know. I mean, I saw them a week ago at Manchester City, and even though they lost 4-1, they played fantastic football for a lot of that game and really caused City considerable problems.
But I think they've kind of stopped a bit, haven't they? I mean, the season there's not much to play for.
That's true.
Have you noticed? I was trying to see if 3 teams previously managed by Roy Hodgson could be going down this season, but it could be just 2, couldn't it? And he could have the champions. It's a strange Hodgson trip.
So former Hodgson sides could this season...
2 of them go down and 1 of them wins the league.
I sense a column coming on.
Or just a pointless random observation.
Mm-hmm.
I had a weird dream about Roy Hodgson the other day.
Oh, and one about Gordon Strachan, you were saying.
Yeah, I did, yeah. I'm going through the international managers.
Right. Did you start with Pep Guardiola?
No, I started with Gordon Strachan.
Ooh.
Strachan, he was, in my dream, Gordon Strachan was, he'd decreed that only Scottish players could play in Scotland.
Yes.
And it was like he was Vladimir Putin. It was on the television. There were these big pictures of Gordon Strachan's face.
Yeah.
And everyone was really upset and worried about it. And he was going to, people were furious.
Right.
And
was it like a rally?
No, he'd announced that only Scottish players were going to play, and people were really worried, and they were talking about on the news, like, what is this, is going to destabilise Europe, and things like that.
Wow, listen, send us your analysis of Barney's dreams.
I don't know what it means. Should I tell you about my Hodgson one as well?
Would we like to hear
it? It's clean.
Yeah.
In my Hodgson dream, Roy Hodgson had played with three centre-forwards in Manaus against... It's actually quite a good tactical dream. He'd played with three centre-forwards.
Yeah.
Just like Jose Mourinho had in that game against Paris.
Yeah.
And like Verratti was a bit like Pirlo. That was his reasoning. And someone brought this up, and Roy Hodgson had a fight in his press conference.
Three forwards did he find to stick up there?
Well, I don't know, actually. I didn't get into that. I just knew that the thing had happened. They had played three forwards, and he kept saying, Jose Mourinho did it. And there was a kind of scuffle in the press conference.
Wow, this is brilliant.
You know when you wake up and you've had a very vivid dream like that, and you're trying to come to terms with it? What were you thinking at that point, Barney, when you wake up and you've had a crazy dream about Roy Hodgson? I once had a dream about Martin O'Neill, and... I just remember waking up thinking, oh my God, is this what my life has come to?
That I'm embarrassed. About, I mean, my inner life has just dwindled away to nothing, you know, dreaming about Roy Hodgson.
Food for thought there, eh, listeners? Mm. Now, we haven't finished. There's still Stoke Newcastle. Stoke are just 3 points behind Newcastle. And as Mark Hughes put it, I would suggest that we have better momentum than they do right now. Well done, Sparky, you do. Newcastle, in fact, have had four straight defeats in which they've scored no goals and conceded. Is it 12 now? I think it was 11 coming into this, so that would make it 12. Yeah,
that would make it 12.
Pretty rotten, isn't it? Poor old Newcastle fans.
Well, they've just basically given up, haven't they?
Well, there is some good news for Newcastle fans, and
what's
it's
that?
Called Sunderland, who are now doomed, I would suggest, Barry, doomed.
I mean, they mathematically still... get out of it, but anyone who's seen them play will know that no, they're doomed.
Hmm. Right.
It would be a blessing at this stage. Just,
would it?
Yeah.
There's talk of Poyet going, isn't there?
He sort of made a quite cryptic remark that suggested he may leave during the summer. He seems to think there's something rotten at the core of Sunderland.
Ooh.
And he may well be right, because there's... There are, I think, teams... I mean, there's... Oh, I've said it so many times, but there's so many bad teams in the Premier League. I mean,
what sort of
Newcastle are pretty much as bad as it gets at the moment, and they're ninth. You know, so all the teams beneath Newcastle are worse than Newcastle.
Apart from Crystal Palace, who got manager of the year.
Yeah. But I'm just, you know, sort of going by the league table.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of very bad teams, and Sunderland are the worst of those.
Wow.
Which... It's kind of something to be perversely proud of.
I suppose, if you like.
It's all they have.
I'm wondering what kind of dark secret they have. What's in their attic in a Jane Eyre fashion?
I don't know. There's a suggestion that there's a big booze culture at the club. The players don't look after themselves. But you would think it's up to the manager to sort that out.
You were saying that being worst of a bad bunch is all Sunderland have, but I put it to you, Barry, that they are also European leaders in another field. Can you guess what it is? Joint European leaders.
It's either own goals or red cards.
Own goals. They are joint with Reims as the joint most prolific own goal scorers.
Right.
Now that they're up to six. In fact, own goals is their second highest scorer, right behind Adam Johnson.
There's a brilliant picture of Wes Brown, his own goal just about to happen in the paper today. He looks really hopeful. There's a look on his face of, I'm going to do something good now. And you know that just a microsecond later...
Imagine if people went through your daily life taking pictures of you just before you do things.
It'd be awful. Yeah.
Here's James about to record his intro. He's got a happy look on his face. He has no idea what's about to happen.
It's really touching, though. You look at Wes Brown and you think, you want to hug him, you know, and say, Wes...
That's a powerful
picture.
It's
okay.
Right. Anyway, now, Everton, meantime, from that game at the Stadium of Light, have now moved into fourth place. Are they going to give up on that? They still have a game against Chelsea. Is it over? Is your Champions League run over, Amy?
I think
everyone wants to see Everton in there, freshen it up. They deserve it, don't they?
I'm sure lots of people do. I think that a lot depends on how Arsenal can recover physically from the exertions of their weekend. They look absolutely exhausted during most of the semi-final.
Because you're at West Ham on Tuesday.
It's a home game to West Ham,
right? And a win there obviously puts you back into fourth.
Well, I think if Arsenal can get a win against West Ham when the squad is really exhausted and there aren't that many options of people to bring in, and I think they've got enough possibility with players coming back that they could, in theory, win the games ahead of them. Because they haven't got massively challenging fixtures ahead. I think Everton's running is harder, but Everton have that momentum, don't they? So Arsenal are still vulnerable to kind of being very shaky and unpredictable and things not quite working out for them, whereas Everton look like they've got much more confidence in the way that they're playing.
What an extraordinary season awaits as we head into this final reel of the Premier League story, of the football story of this season. Bang. That's it for today's Football Weekly. Many thanks to Barry, to Amy and to Barney, and of course to Greg, who was in a bit earlier, and to producer Ben, and you, listener, you will be back on Thursday reacting to Arsenal West Ham, the Copa del Rey, other things as well. So have a super time until then, and bye for now.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code Guardian.